California is now the fourth largest economy in the world, but this year, the state is facing a $12 billion budget deficit. Governor Gavin Newsom is blaming the deficit on what he calls the Trump slump, Trump's tariffs, and market uncertainty. Though Governor Newsom ran for governor on the promise of universal health care, his proposed cuts include $5 billion to Medi-Cal, the state's Medicaid program that provides health care coverage to over 14 million people. Those cuts include a series of proposals targeting adult Californians who are undocumented. The budget would freeze enrollment to Medi-Cal for that community starting in January. It would institute $100 per month premiums for those currently enrolled and remove access to long-term care and dental benefits, among other proposals. The Medi-Cal asset limit of $2,000 per individual and $3,000 per couple to qualify would be reinstated, and a lot of people say they are very scared about that. Newsom also calls for reallocating billions in funds from Proposition 35 and supplemental payments from the state tobacco tax, which were specifically earmarked by voters to strengthen the state's health safety net and reproductive health care services. Instead, the budget threatens access to birth control, abortion care, STI prevention, and more, according to Essential Access Health. With the state legislature required to pass a budget plan by June 15th, negotiations of Newsom's proposal are underway as healthcare advocates across the state are sounding the alarm, saying the budget would leave hundreds of thousands of vulnerable people without essential healthcare. And all of this comes as Senate Republicans in Congress are considering a bill that would make significant cuts to programs including Medicaid and reproductive health services, which could require Newsom and state legislators to revise the state budget even more dramatically later this year. The California Budget and Policy Center points out that Governor Newsom's revised budget fails to propose any major tax policy changes to increase state revenues to address the shortfall, avoid cuts, and buffer against emerging federal threats, even while federal leaders are preparing to give away more than $4 trillion in tax cuts to high-income households and corporations. So how are healthcare and social service advocates in California fighting back against these proposed cuts? Today, we're joined by Amy Moy, co-CEO of Essential Access Health, where she leads the organization's work to expand access to sexual and reproductive health care and advance health equity. Amy Moy is a member of the Executive Committee of the Family Planning Councils of America and was appointed by Governor Newsom to serve on California's Protect Access to Healthcare Act's Access Stakeholder Advisory Committee. Essential Access Health says with the uncertainty we are facing at the federal level, California must live up to its promise as a reproductive freedom state. Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. Sarah Darr is Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Children's Partnership, a nonprofit that works to provide every child in California with a bright future. Sarah previously served as Policy Director at the California Immigrant Policy Center, where she led coalitions advocating for immigrant justice across a range of issues. She was one of many advocates who worked so hard to ensure California's 700,000 undocumented immigrants ages 26 to 49 receive Medi-Cal. The Children's Partnership says cynically discriminating against our state's immigrant communities by rolling back Medi-Cal eligibility is unconscionable and will not solve the state's budget problems. Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. First off, I want to ask you both, do you agree with Governor Newsom? Is this budget shortfall the result of Trump's tariffs and market uncertainty? Sarah, what are your thoughts?
Um, I don't think, you know, I think the governor is right to place a lot of blame squarely on the Trump administration for the state of our economy right now. There's a lot out there that indicates that the tariffs alone have resulted in a downturn in the economy. And so it is a reality that that our state administration is now grappling with. I don't think there's any denying that.
What about you, Amy? What are your thoughts?
I think we are facing a lot of uncertainty. 2025 has really come in with a lot of challenges, and not only across the country and the world, but here in California, with starting with some of the emergencies that we've had with the Los Angeles tragic wildfires, as well as just thinking about what is happening in the global economy right now, as well as needing to really think about the uncertainty ahead and changes in policy at the federal level, because that could really impact California's bottom line. So we do need to be planning for and thinking about, you know, how California is going to be responding and meeting this moment. And, you know, I do think, though, that while we have to be responsive and planning for the future, we also have to make sure that we are continuing to invest in things like healthcare that we know are cost saving in the long run.
So before we talk about these cuts, can you give us some context? What do we need to know about the state's most vulnerable populations? First off, California is a massive state. Almost 40 million people live in California. The budget is massive. It's $226 billion. In 2023, California's poverty rate was almost 19%. Which is the highest in the United States, according to the California Budget and Policy Center. So of a state of 40 million people, just over 7 million do not meet their basic needs. I mean, that is a lot of people. And this disproportionately affects people of color. And then one more statistic, about 14 million people are enrolled in Medi-Cal, the state's version of Medicaid. And in order to qualify for one person, you have to make less than about $21,000. And then for two people, it's about $29,000. So I think this information is really important for context. What other context would you like to share, Sarah, before we talk about these proposed budget cuts?
I think, you know, we've done so much work over the years in helping Californians to understand and really debunk a lot of right-wing talking points around who undocumented Californians are. And so that's why we were able to pass policies like the Medi-Cal expansion for everyone, regardless of immigration status. Public opinion is with us on this issue. But unfortunately, the public narrative has been flooded with this really hateful, patently false right-wing characterization of immigrants as people who are other than us, outside of, they're not Californians, and that they're somehow draining or taking from our state resources. That is absolutely not true. So that's important context. Undocumented Californians pay nearly $8.5 billion in state and local taxes. That's just in 2022. They're the backbone of so many sectors of our economy. As I said, they're paying, you know, not only sales tax, but so many of them, people may not realize, pay income tax as well. There is a way to file income tax, and the IRS the state are happy to collect income tax from people, even if they don't have a Social Security number. So these are people who are contributing, and if anything, because of being locked out of access to safety net programs, are actually contributing and not reaping the benefits of being able to count on our safety nets systems and programs when they need it, like the rest of us are. So it's actually quite the opposite of what the right, what Republicans, what Donald Trump would have you believe about this population. Of course, for them, it's convenient to scapegoat this population and this community, but they are Californians. They are your neighbors. They are workers right alongside the rest of us. Their kids are in school right alongside our children, and there's absolutely no really no justification for them being locked out of public programs, apart from, you know, the fact that there is, for vast majority of these people, no pathway for them to adjust their status. And that's a result of the federal immigration policies that we cannot change as a state. And so that's why as a state, we've chosen to still make sensible public policy that allows our community members to have access to the same safety net service that services that everybody else does, until and unless Congress can, you know, figure out how to get past the much needed immigration reform that they've attempted many times over the past several decades and have just yet still failed to address. But until those broken immigration policies are fixed and people have a way to get those papers in their hands that we, you know, that the right tends to make such a big deal about, with or without that paperwork, these are people who are Californians by every other definition of the word. And so excluding them and doing things like what the governor has proposed in the May revise, balancing our budget by stripping away services from them, there's really no justification and no way to, you know, no rationale to justify it. That would be really the context and foundation I'd set for any conversation about these cuts.
Well, thank you for that. And we should mention that in 2022, California made history by becoming the first state in the country to fully remove exclusions for Medi-Cal coverage for all who are income eligible, regardless of age or immigration status. I mean, this really changed people's lives. And we'll talk about how this budget would affect that. Amy, what other context would you like to provide before we talk about these proposed cuts?
Thanks, Rose. I think that, you know, somebody mentioned earlier that we in California are now, you know, the home of the fourth largest economy in the world. And you think about that, and that is staggering and a point of pride. But then it's hard to square that with the statistics that you also shared around how many people are living in poverty and struggling every day to make ends meet. And some of the programs that we'll be talking about today are for these individuals who are, you know, working multiple jobs, you know, trying to raise their children with dignity, and you know, and we have to remember that when we might be talking about, you know, health coverage being cut, these same individuals are also facing multiple challenges to their health and well-being in this current environment. The same folks that may be facing cuts from Medi-Cal coverage or, you know, be facing barriers to access essential health services like time-sensitive family planning and birth control care are also seeing their, you know, assistance for SNAP and food stamps to make sure that their families can eat, or, you know, domestic violence shelters are having to shut because they're not getting the federal grants that are being withheld. And so I think that there are just multitudes of challenges facing the same populations that we'll talk about are going to be impacted by potential cuts in healthcare. So that is something that we have to be talking about when we think about these challenges facing our community members, and how we can look at everything in a holistic manner and make sure that individuals aren't facing cut after cut after cut, hit after hit after hit, when they're already struggling to make ends meet and get by.
Amy Moy is co-CEO of Essential Access Health, where she leads the organization's work to expand access to sexual and reproductive health care. Sarah Darr is vice president of policy and advocacy for the Children's Partnership. They work to provide every child in California with a bright future. Sarah previously served as policy director at the California Immigrant Policy Center. Today, we are talking about Governor Newsom's proposed budget cuts. He announced that the state is facing a $12 billion budget deficit, blaming it on what he calls the Trump slump. This would really affect the state's most vulnerable populations. So many organizations put out damning statements about this, because in addition to what we've been talking about, it would also affect in-home supportive care, child welfare, programs for LGBTQ people. We did a show recently about the warm line. That's the line that people call if they are feeling isolated or feeling down, or they want to talk to someone about substance abuse. They told us that it really helps people before they call 911, and it saves the state a lot of money. And they're still very concerned because there's not enough money in the budget for the warm line. So there's so many things that are potentially on the chopping block. If you have any questions, what are your thoughts on Governor Newsom's budget? If there's something that maybe you saw in the news but you want to know more about, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So let's drill down and talk about some of these Medi-Cal cuts. Among the most controversial of these policies is the reinstatement of the Medi-Cal asset limit of $2,000 per person to qualify for care, $3,000 per couple. Can we please talk about what this would mean? Because CalMatters' Kristen Huang had a really important piece called "I'm Really Scared, Elderly and Disabled Californians with More Than $2,000 Could Lose Medi-Cal." Cindy Soto, a quadriplegic who requires around-the-clock care, has been on Medi-Cal for most of her life. Recently, she came into a modest inheritance, about $8,000, that has helped cover her daily expenses. But it also means that she would lose her state health insurance under a proposal from Governor Gavin Newsom. This is just so hard to understand. Sarah, do you want to take this one first? Whenever we do shows on this, people who are on Medi-Cal say, when are they going to increase these caps? Who can live on $2,000? And now, I mean, who can live on these very short amounts of money, small amounts of money, and now he's proposing restoring this $2,000 limit?
Yeah, it really is egregious. And, you know, the only thing I can think of with regard to this proposal, as well as, like, cuts to coverage for undocumented individuals, because these are policies that were most recently instituted, I think that sometimes, you know, decision makers feel like they're the easiest to get rid of. People, they haven't been around as long, and so it's easier to pull something away from people that, you know, hadn't existed for a long time, as opposed to policies that have been in place, that have been in place much longer. So sort of like last one in, first one out type of logic, which really, there, again, no rational justification for it. I mean, this means that people who have, you know, $2,000 in the bank account, you know, now can't have Medi-Cal, which is like life-saving healthcare for people who are disabled or older adults. So I really can't make much sense of it. And, you know, hope that this is another one that the administration will reconsider.
What is the current limit?
It's been eliminated altogether. So there was a gradual phase out. Advocates have been working on this for a very long time. And finally, in I think 2022, they raised it temporarily to $130,000. So that's a drastic increase, right? That makes a huge difference for a large swath of people. And then eventually it was phased out altogether so that there is no asset test at all. And now the governor, in his May revise, has proposed to go all the way back.
Wow. Okay. So thank you. So CalMatters reports that, yes, Newsom agreed to raise the limit to $130,000 per person in 2022. And then last year, the limit was erased completely. So this allows people to breathe, and then family members can help them out. If someone passes, they can get an inheritance. So we're going from no limit back to the original of $2,000, which was set back in 1989. I mean, you can only imagine that people are absolutely frightened right now. In the case of the woman whose story was told in CalMatters, Cindy Soto, she says that it is not cheap being disabled. I'm really scared. I cannot live without my help. She says that with the inheritance, she can afford repairs on her condo. She can buy medical supplies that Medi-Cal does not cover, but she might have to lose her caretaker that helps her bathe and eat. How are advocates on this issue, especially Sarah, what are they doing around this to ensure that this $2,000 cap does not make it in the budget?
You know, there are other advocates who are leading the efforts around the asset test, and you know, we've been in a supportive position. I think across the board, advocates have really come together. I mean, health advocates, anti-poverty advocates, you know, immigrant rights, immigrant justice advocates have really come together to say, you know, no cut is acceptable. No cut that's made on the back of someone who's low income, someone who's elderly, someone who's facing really horrific attacks, anti-immigrant policies and rhetoric, right? None of these are the communities that deserve to be, you know, thrown under the bus in this moment. So advocates have really come together to lobby the governor's administration and the legislature. You know, the legislature has yet to come out with the Senate and the Assembly have yet to come out with their proposals for what a balanced budget could look like. And we've heard really vocal opposition from many champions in the state legislature that are not in line and are not in lockstep with the governor on these particular proposals. So that's where a lot of the strategy is right now, is working with legislators who represent districts all across the state where constituents are going to be impacted by these policies, to hopefully advocate with Senate and Assembly leadership to come out with their version of a balanced budget that finds different solutions to our budget problems and not these ones. And so we're hopeful that, you know, that's where that balance comes into play, right, of these three parties that come together to negotiate the final state budget, the Senate, Assembly, and the governor's administration. And we're hoping the other two parties will stand in, you know, against these cuts and find other solutions, other ways to come up with a balanced budget. And I'm sure it will be difficult regardless, but we do absolutely believe it's doable. And we've seen a lot of really supportive comments from many members of the state legislature. So we're hoping that their version of the budget will be something better and that we can really get behind that. And we're hopeful that that's, you know, that might be what some of the next steps look like. And then the negotiation with the governor's administration to land on something better in time to pass the budget.
Sarah, we have a question from Robert who says, can you clarify, will the proposed asset limit apply to all Medi-Cal recipients or just home care Californians?
I believe it applies to the non-MAGI population, so older adults and people with disabilities.
So older 65 adults.
65 and older. Yeah, sorry, individuals who are 65 and older,
okay.
And people who have disabilities, people who qualify for Medi-Cal on those two bases,
okay.
Not everyone else.
Okay, so 65 and older and people with disabilities who exceed that limit would be ineligible. Sarah Darr is Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Children's Partnership. And before we go to break, I want to welcome Amanda McAllister-Wallner to the show. Amanda is Executive Director of Health Access, where she's been a leader in the federal campaign to defend Medi-Cal and fight for our health. Amanda joined Health Access in 2016 as Director of the California LGBTQ Health and Human Services Network. She developed a statewide LGBTQ health policy agenda and successfully advocated for policies that improve access to LGBTQ affirming services. Hi, Amanda. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you, Amanda. We've been talking about this $2,000 limit on individuals' assets and $3,000 for couples. CalMatters had a very important piece. A lot of people say they are very scared of these potential limits. Can you talk about these and what are you and other advocates doing around this specific issue?
Yeah, thank you for making sure that folks know about this change, about this proposed change. This would take us back to a time when, in order to get the healthcare that you need, people had to impoverish themselves. They had to completely deplete their savings in order to get basic healthcare needs. And like Sarah said, this is only for folks who are older adults and people with disabilities. This asset test does not apply to the rest of the Medi-Cal population. So we are asking our vulnerable communities to further impoverish themselves in order to get access to basic healthcare needs. And we've seen a huge outcry against this. When the state legislature had its budget committee hearings over the last few weeks to discuss these policies, we saw, you know, dozens of folks who would be impacted by this proposal show up in the committee, speak out about the importance of having access to Medi-Cal and what this would mean for their lives to see these limits put back in place. My organization, Health Access, co-hosted a lobby day last week pushing back against the proposed limits on Medi-Cal for immigrants in California. And we know there was a lobby day the same day by Senior Disability Action and a number of Justice and Aging and a number of other partners who are, you know, really trying to make sure that legislators understand the impacts of these. And like you pointed out, this is a number that was set in 1989. The economy has drastically changed since then. The $2,000 does not go very far. In terms of savings, and it really does make it, nearly impossible to be able to have any type of savings to respond to any type of an emergency, to be able to take care of those necessities that Medi-Cal doesn't cover. It really is just unconscionable to think about going back to a time when we were requiring people to go further and deeper into poverty in order to get the basic health care that they need.
And one more real life example here. Thanks to Kristen Huang at CalMatters for this important story. She writes about Al Sanderson. He is a Redondo Beach resident who broke his neck 3 years ago in a surfing accident that left him paralyzed. He said his monthly rent costs more than the asset limit. He has significant savings as a former high school physical education teacher and baseball coach that he uses to pay for utilities, transportation, and things that his kids need now that he no longer works. If he got kicked off Medi-Cal and lost his caretakers, he would lose his independence. He says, how am I going to pay people to come help me? How am I supposed to survive and live? I'd have to go to a nursing home. Amanda, this just breaks your heart, because it's one thing to talk about these limits, but it's another thing to hear these real life stories. And I got to say, I feel like in the media, we hardly hear from people like Al Sanderson. Here's a guy who's a former high school physical education teacher and a baseball coach. Sounds like an amazing guy. Broke his neck 3 years ago in a surfing accident, and now he's paralyzed. And these are the kinds of stories that we just need to hear more about in this very expensive state. And what is he going to do if these caps are reinstated?
Yeah, no, I think absolutely. I honestly was sickened watching some of the debates happening in Washington earlier this year. They were pointing at California's, move away from this draconian asset test and talking about, giving Medi-Cal to millionaires as a justification for the horrific cuts that they're proposing to the program in Washington. And it just couldn't be further from the truth. The folks who are impacted are, people who are in the situation, because of a disability, because of their age, through no fault of their own. And we are now asking them to have to make these horrible life and death decisions. And it is, like you said, these are our families, these are our neighbors, these are members of our communities. It is real people that are impacted by the proposed cuts, and it is, it is not some talking point to score political points. And it is horrible to see the way that some of these communities, some of these people, some of these lives have been politicized, you know, over the last year with these attacks on Medi-Cal.
And Amy, what would you like to add before we go to break?
Yeah, I would just say, well, first, Cal Matters and Catherine Wong have been doing really important reporting, and some of these stories that you're sharing are just devastating. I guess the other perspective that I'd want to share is a lot of the proposals included in the May revise, I think it's important to note, are just a conversation starter. And as was mentioned earlier, now we need to call on the state legislative leaders to take urgent action to sustain vital programs, to maintain the hard work earned progress that California has made to really be a leader in expanding access to critical health and human services for Californians, particularly those with lower incomes who are struggling every day to make ends meet. And, you know, while a lot of the proposals that I think we're seeing in the May revise are a response to or in anticipation of current and future threats from the federal level that we're facing, it's important to note that a lot of, you know, these draconian policies that we may be discussing and needing to reverse are in response to real problems that we are facing at the federal level. And now it's time that we have to call on our state leaders to come up with the solutions and not on the backs of the people who are already marginalized and are facing, you know, deep challenges on a day-to-day basis.
And in the piece, Linda Ngai with the Western Center on Law and Poverty said, our clients are not millionaires. We're talking about people with very low incomes who are not able to access the healthcare services they need. On today's Your Call, we are talking about California Governor Gavin Newsom's proposed budget cuts. He just announced that the state is facing a $12 billion budget deficit. So as a result, he's proposed a series of deep cuts to Medi-Cal. Budget also threatens access to birth control, abortion care, in-home supportive services, child welfare, and California's warm line. The budget fails to propose any major tax policy changes to increase revenues to address these shortfalls. So what do you want to know about California's budget? What are your thoughts on these potential budget cuts? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Amy Moy, co-CEO of Essential Access Health, Sarah Darr, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Children's Partnership, and Amanda McAllister-Wallner, Executive Director of Health Access. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Professor Joan Williams will be back to continue our discussion about her book, Outclassed, How the Left Lost the Working Class and How to Win Them Back. We hope you can join us tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we will continue our series on health by talking about why chronic disease and cancer rates are on the rise in this country and prevention methods. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about California's budget and Governor Newsom's recent announcement about the state facing a $12 billion budget deficit and his proposed cuts, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you have any questions about these cuts or your thoughts, you can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Amanda McAllister-Wallner, Executive Director of Health Access, Sarah Darr, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Children's Partnership, and Amy Moy, co-CEO of Essential Access Health. So we talked about those potential limits. There's so many other cuts here and there. Can you tell us what else really concerns you and what you think people need to know about, given that today is June 3rd and the state legislature has to pass a budget plan by June 15th? So, Amy, what else concerns you when it comes to healthcare in the budget?
Yeah, first, I think that while we recognize the difficult decisions that state leaders are facing this year, particularly amid budgetary pressures caused by hostile federal actions, it seems like a lot of the pain points are put squarely on health access, including access to sexual and reproductive health care. I think what, you know, listeners need to know and what we're trying to really amplify is that California has long been known as a leader in expanding and protecting access to essential sexual and reproductive health services, including access to birth control, abortion care, STI and HIV prevention and treatment. And right now, based on the proposals in the May revise, we're facing a potential of harmful combination of proposed state cuts to sexual and reproductive health care programs, program funding drying up, and current and imminent federal funding cuts that could devastate the sexual and reproductive health care safety net statewide. And with federal threats escalating on all levels, including for access to sexual and reproductive health care, really the stakes have never been higher. And California must do everything possible to hold the line as our as our self-proclaimed position as a reproductive freedom state, and we're calling on our legislative leaders first to reject funding cuts proposed in the May revise and also ensure that we're able to sustain family planning and abortion access programs and STI and HIV prevention programs that right now are serving millions of Californians and expanding options and pathways to time-sensitive health services. This really is no time to retreat on our state's priorities and promises. And, you know, with these federal threats, it's time to fortify our protections and not reverse course. So things that we're tracking in particular and the May revise and calling on state legislative leaders to reject is a clawback of supplemental payments to healthcare providers for family planning and abortion care from voter-approved Prop 56 funds. That would be a potential, if those cuts are allowed to go through, it would be an elimination of more than $500 million in supplemental payments. And without some of those additional payments we know that help make care possible, we know that the healthcare safety net will be deeply impacted. The May revise also proposes to shut down the Reproductive Justice and Freedom Fund, which is funding that has already been awarded through existing contracts to community-based organizations, including Essential Access Health. And these funds are to go to community outreach and education in culturally responsive and appropriate ways and to counter rampant misinformation about sexual and reproductive health. There's also a proposal to shift the way that funds that are allocated for reproductive health, $90 million allocated for reproductive health from a voter-approved Prop 35 dollars that was passed last fall, were originally discussed to go toward provider rate increases that help keep provider doors open, reduce wait times for patients to access critical care, and to ensure that providers can offer these essential health services like family planning and abortion services to people who are in the Medi-Cal system. The proposal also did not include critical investments or calling on legislative leaders to include, like protecting family planning services by backfilling the loss of Title X funding. You know, as of April 1, California providers are not receiving federal Title X family planning dollars because they have been wrongfully withheld by the Trump administration. And we have not received any word or time frame on when those funds may be released or the decision-making process that'll be involved in that release of funds. We also are calling on the legislature to sustain the uncompensated care abortion grant program, which has supported over 130,000 patients in accessing abortion and contraceptive care. This was a program started when Roe was overthrown at the federal level, and that this was California's moment to shine, where we really step forward to create new programs like the Uncompensated Care Program to ensure access, and then also understanding the important and outsized role that Los Angeles County plays in access to providing care and the size of the population. We also are calling on the legislature to continue the Los Angeles County Abortion Safe Haven Program and also be able to maintain abortion.ca.gov, which is a trusted resource for people to access information about abortion care and get connected to providers. And one last thing, you know, we also are seeing not only attacks on birth control, abortion care, but also draconian cuts at the federal level on and reversals on HIV and STI prevention funding. Mm-hmm. And so we are calling on the state to also make sure that California programs that are here to address this syndemic public health crisis of HIV and STI cases, to make sure that we have the funding in California to continue to invest in programs that are preventative and ensure treatment for those who need it. And so when you think about all of these pieces, it really is, you know, threats to the critical fabric of the healthcare safety net on top of any draconian cuts to Medi-Cal access. So we're seeing you know, the fabric of our public health safety net really at risk here.
Wow. You laid out so much there, Amy, because you're getting hit at the federal level and now possibly at the state level. And this is so important to emphasize. In addition to Title 10, Essential Access Health also points out that Trump's budget would completely eliminate the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program. We've got to do shows about this. And then you talked about LA. Essential Health received written notification April 30th from the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health Division of HIV and STD Programs that its contract to provide critical prevention services will be terminated on May 31st due to unprecedented uncertainty surrounding federal funding. So this is all so difficult, Amy, because these programs are being hit so hard by the federal level, and now they might be hit hard at the state level.
That's right. And we are really, at the same time, we're also seeing a rising need for services across the state, especially in communities already facing barriers to care. And that's why we're calling on the legislature and saying this is the time to strengthen, not slash investments in our healthcare infrastructure at the state level, because we know that we are facing kind of hit after hit, both upfront and with funds being withheld, programs being slashed and eliminated. And also a tactic in the Trump administration right now is just holding and not releasing notices of award. And so the challenge that you mentioned in LA County with HIV and STI prevention funds and agreements being halted is because as of June 1st, when the new project period for LA County to receive their CDC grant and their grant directly from the Centers for Disease and Preventive Services, they have not received their notice of award for their new project period. So The Trump administration is causing great immediate harm on a daily basis by withholding funds, cutting and eliminating programs, and the staff that have been critical to moving those programs forward, but also just sitting on notices of award and leaving folks in great states of uncertainty and not knowing how they're going to proceed, if the funding will come, if it will come at all, what kind of strings it may come with, and what extent of the time period of the new funding awards will be. So we are in an unprecedented time of uncertainty, but we are hopeful that our legislative leaders will look at the compounding problems that we're facing, and that the final budget will reflect California's values and uphold our collective commitment to the transformations we've been able to achieve in our health system, including around sexual and reproductive health.
Amy Moy is co-CEO of Essential Access Health. We're also joined by Sarah Dar, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Children's Partnership, and Amanda McAllister-Wallner, Executive Director of Health Access. We've got a number of callers who've been waiting patiently. I wish we had more time for today's show. Let's go to Danielle in Berkeley. Hi, Danielle. Thank you for holding.
Hi, thank you. Maybe your comment or your explanation kind of answered this a little bit, because it sounds like these changes are going to be implemented, right, like as we speak. But my question was, when and if California does make these changes, when would they be how soon after the voting on approval of these changes would they be implemented? Would it be immediate? Would we have time to organize? Secondly, my comment is just that, you know, I am currently the medical director for my mother. She's in her 70s. I'm the perfect sandwich generation of having a boomer parent. I'm a millennial myself, and I have two children under the age of 5. And I'm just kind of reeling as she's in long-term care currently, you know, with a low share of costs, which is her entire Social Security, which is her only income. We're hoping that at some point she goes home with IHSS support, but it sounds like, given, you know, that she's a part of this vulnerable population of cuts, that might not even be an option either. Are we just locked into long-term care? And that's it. Thank you so much.
Gosh, thank you so much, Danielle. I feel for you. And this is why we're doing this series on health and caregiving. In fact, we're going to be having a major caregiving event on Saturday, June 21st at 220 Montgomery in San Francisco. A number of organizations are going to be there to offer information. We're going to have a panel. So we will be sharing more information about this. But Saturday, June 21st from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., caregiving event at 220 Montgomery in San Francisco. We'll get your a question answered in just a minute. Let's take a few more calls. Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hi. This may be not pertinent to this section you're talking about, but the previous one. People on SSI and SSDI have lived for years with this $2,000 limit on their assets, which has made life very miserable for those people. So I could see the state upping that. I'm not sure about $130,000, but I think that a level that would be reasonable would be certainly helpful. And the other thing, too, is that if people who are disabled or elderly come into money, and the states have this program where there's not a limit on that. One of the things that that's available to people who are disabled is what's called special needs funds or special needs trusts, and that might be something that the state might look into in terms of allowing people to receive monies in excess of what normally might be received and put away in a special needs trust, which can then be used.
Thank you for that, Greg. We actually just got an email about this. It's calable.ca.gov, and this is for people with disabilities. So they can actually have assets and not be hit by these asset limits. So thank you, Greg. Sorry to cut you off. We're almost out of time. We'll take one more caller quickly, and then we'll get responses. Tim in Oakland. Hi, Tim. We're almost out of time.
Hi. Well, I can make this quick. If a person is over 65 and disabled and on Medi-Cal, are they going to be removed from Medi-Cal under this new proposal?
Thank you for that. Amanda, do you want to take that one first? And we have just a couple of minutes left.
Thank you. I'll answer this and also the first question about the timeline of when things will be implemented.
Thank you.
If you are over 65 and on Medi-Cal, you will be subject to the asset test. For those who have more than $2,000 in their bank account, they will no longer be eligible for Medi-Cal. So if you're currently on it, but you no longer meet that test, yes, you would be disenrolled from Medi-Cal when redetermination happens. That proposal is scheduled to take effect on January 1st. So it would not be right away, but it would be January 1st. There are a number of different dates that the various proposals would go into effect. Some things go into effect July 1st. For instance, we didn't have a chance to talk about it, but the ending of the California Reducing Disparities Project and the closure of the Gender Health Equity Unit, those things would happen immediately on July 1st, the first day of the new budget year. Some things would go into effect in January of 2026, and some things would even potentially be in future budget years. But yes, so there are a variety of timelines, but for the asset test, it would be January 1st of next year.
Okay, thank you for that. We've got a number of emails. I'll just read a few. Leslie writes, I don't understand the asset limits that seem to be less than a month of Social Security. A single person in San Francisco not already on rent control cannot even rent a studio for $2,000. How would they buy food or any other essentials? Has Governor Newsom totally lost all sense of the cost of daily living? Does he really want more people homeless? Art writes, the governor or members of the legislature should call a special session to raise revenues instead of balancing the budget on the backs of the poorest and most vulnerable. California has the most billionaires of any geographic area of the world. Let's think outside the box in an era of massive inequality and tax the rich to avoid this needless suffering. Call your state legislators and the governor. Art says, I've done this. It takes some time for someone to pick up the phone, but they will. And the number is 916-445-2841, 916-445-2841. And I'm sorry we didn't get to all of your questions and comments. Amy, Sarah, and Amanda, a lot of people obviously are very, very concerned about this. So it's June 3rd. The state legislature has to pass a budget plan by June 15th. So we definitely need to do another show. The word needs to get out. And we would love to have you back. I'm sorry that we don't have more time because a lot of people are writing in. Amy Moy is co-CEO of Essential Access Health. Sarah Dar is Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Children's Partnership. Amanda McAllister-Wallner is Executive Director of Health Access. Thank you all so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us, and I agree with Art. Call the governor, call your state legislators.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.